Graham, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well, very well.
Welcome back, Mal. You're sounding resilient, gents. What's your impression of the Reeves Spring statement and the subsequent fallout?
Well, it wasn't a great deal of choice, really. It's been obvious, the public finances are in a state, and they're getting worse, both because I think of the rather foolish increase on employer taxes, which is going to help growth, but the world situation is deteriorating, and Labour came in without the normal bonus of a strong economy that they inherit from the Tories. They didn't get that this time, and I can see, and Labour people didn't get elected because they want to behave like Conservatives. So I can see why they're upset, but I don't see what great alternative there is, really.
If you're in Germany, you seem to be, the post-Schulz government appears to be going for something like quantitative easing, if I understand correctly. That the notion basically that the Chancellor can, when necessary, print money in order to get over the particular that you mentioned the world situation, their shibboleth, that is Trump's reining back on his own commitment to defend us. Sort of regionally and globally. Is that the elephant in the room here?
Well, quantitative easing, may give you a brief boost, but it's by definition it always increases inflation because you've got more money in the circuit than otherwise would have been the case, and therefore that money is less valuable. We now that inflation's sort of bouncing around the 2% level again, although drifting up, we kind of forget it's not so very long ago that we were looking at double figure inflation, very close to double figure inflation. And obviously, part of that was because of world energy prices and world food prices caused by a variety of factors, not least Ukraine. But also, part of it was the overhang from Mr. Carney's quantitative easing around the time of the pandemic, which, yeah, it eases the wheels of the economy for a little while, but it does tend to come back and bite you when inflation takes off again.
Yeah, I see Leonie joining us now. Graham, how did she do with Echoes of Bruce Forsyth there? I realise as I'm saying it.
I think we found the black hole of 20 billion plus
Inglorious discovery, yeah.
in the sewage overflow, building an unnecessary tunnel to take the overflow.
Could you explain your reasoning there? I think I see what you're driving at, and it's a usefully apparently tangential starting point.
Well, the Thames Tunnel is taxing all Londoners. We're taxing all Londoners, way past 20 billion. They're now 14 billion in debt, and the interest payments on that is going to be on for
Not costing that amount of
how
money.
many
Morning,
hundred,
Bobby. It's
what?
not costing that amount of money. It's in a joint venture. It's completely separate. The Thames Tideway Tunnel Limited is a separate joint company, and the cost of the tunnel was originally meant to be 4.2 billion, and I think it's coming in at 4.5 billion, and it's not on the books of Thames Water. All the debt on Thames Water is completely separate from the Tideway Tunnel. Nothing to do with it.
That's called financial engineering.
No, it's called a fact.
A financial engineering fact.
Well,
That's what the court case was about.
the Thames Tideway Tunnel, what we need, because the population of London is now 8 million and is heading towards 10 million. We need a sewer, and that's what the Thames Tideway Tunnel is all
We
about.
didn't.
Darling, you
That's
shouldn't have.
we
We
didn't need.
also,
We didn't need a sewer. That was what the case was
we
about.
do need. We need a big sewer. The original set of sewers constructed by Bazalgette, where he kind of
That
massively.
is Thames Water's argument, and that's
And
what the
but in
court
addition,
showed. The court showed.
In addition, we also need green blue infrastructure as well to deal with the changing climate.
That's what Thames Water argued. That's what Thames Water argued.
We need both. And at the moment, we're in the middle of finishing the sewer to deal with all the sewage. But then after that, we also need to start re-engineering London with suds everywhere, rain gardens everywhere, to deal with the sharp showers and the massive increase in rainfall in these very intense circumstances. So we need the green blue infrastructure as well. We don't need one or the other. We need both. I mean, the fact of the matter is there's twice as many Londoners going to the toilet, let's be blunt, as there were that Basil Geats sewers can cope with. And we need both. We need both because of the changing climate.
All these arguments were rehearsed in court and shown to be...
Thank you very much for that. Very, very useful. Yes, yeah.
And you lost, Graham. You lost the court.
That was the fraud. That was the fraud on Londoners.
But it's got nothing to do with Thames Water's...
That was the financial engineering. I didn't sue Thames Water.
It's got nothing to do with Thames Water's financial woes, which are nothing to do with the Thames Tideway Tunnel.
And I'm wondering if the one might be the difficult circumstance as it now is with the supposed Thames Water's self-imposed constraints, almost the opposite in terms of the yield to shareholders, analogous to Reeves's position. Mal was saying that she has been hemmed in by not only her own targets but also the avoiding inflation at all costs, which quantitative easing, one of the other options put by other commentators, would potentially have yielded. We were talking last time about the optics, the political weather, indeed perhaps the practical effects of the cuts to PIP or the threshold for PIP being raised and what have you. I mean, what are your overall impressions, Leonie?
Well, I mean, the OBR has looked at the situation and they have agreed with her that they've agreed with her that 75% of the issues that she's facing are not of her making, that, you know, all of these other problems and changes that have been going on around the world, including and obviously since January, waking up every morning and who knows what the President of the United States will have announced on tariffs or some other lunacy coming out of his office. I mean, you know, it's a roller coaster hardly begins to describe what Donald Trump is currently doing.
There's a lot of people going to the toilet on both sides of the pond, I think, on the back of this, politically speaking. Yeah. And of course, yes.
Yes, that's one way of putting it. But obviously, there is an element of some hemming in by her fiscal rules and some changing of the political weather through the changes to employers' national insurance. But, you know, there was a pretty bad legacy from the Tories. There was the completely unnecessary cutting of national insurance by Jeremy Hunt, which I think by that stage it was completely irresponsible. The Tories knew that pretty much whatever they did wasn't changing the political weather, and they cut national insurance twice in the lead up to the election.
It's a point of principle, as it were.
And one of the black holes that was discovered in the actual year, in, you know, the current year, was that they hadn't put anything into the budget for the cost of putting asylum seekers up in hotels while their cases were being looked into. And so half of the black hole, which is an expression I don't especially like, but, you know, 10 billion quid. And they'd spent about that the previous year on putting people up in hotels. So of course they should have anticipated that there was going to be spend. Of course they should have budgeted it, but they didn't. So there was an actual real amount of money that was being spent then and there. And that was her argument for saying, well, we've got to get something in this year's budget, hence the winter fuel allowance, which was very difficult, I think, for a lot of people. But if you look at the figures, 11 million pensioners, and at least half of them actually no longer needed the winter fuel allowance whilst at the same time there have been families with small children who did need some sort of allowance. So the winter fuel allowance did need to be amended. I'm not sure, you know, that the way that they did it was ideal, but, you know, that is what was done. You know, there might have been other ways that you could have finessed it in a different way. And I do think there is an issue about the amount of money that's being paid out to people. I've got friends who are aged between 18 and 25, 26. I've spoken to them about the number of people that they know who are being diagnosed with ADHD, OCD, all of these, you know, autistic spectrum disorder.
And will attract additional funding. So,
These conditions, and being diagnosed is helpful because sometimes it means you can take something to ameliorate the condition, but sometimes just knowing that you operate in a slightly different way. But these do not prevent you from working. So what is going on that 1 in 8 people aged between 18 and 24 are not in employment, education or training? You know, what is going on? That is wrong, you know. And getting people back into work and getting them, even if it's part-time work, I think is absolutely critical, because if you don't work in those early years of your life and you don't understand about, you know, getting up and maybe doing repetitive things, you know, it's
having some structure.
It's structure, meaning, contributing to society, feeling
empowerment,
that,
you know, you might say. Yeah.
You know, putting something in as well as getting something out is all incredibly important. So I do actually agree. And, you know, the clue is in the name. We're actually called the Labour Party. I do think, you know, we should be helping people into employment. And there have been a whole series of changes. You can't just talk about the negative changes, you know.
But it's part of the problem.
There's a lot of positive changes.
Yeah, with the looming of Reform UK, is there a need, as it were, to appear the sort of a vengeful big bad wolf as part of the political apparatus, or the adopting, as it were, the tropes that traditionally the right would have adopted, in fact, as you say, having intentions that are, as with the DWP's quietly introduced, I say, access to work grant, seem to be quite helpful ideas.
They are, and they're putting a lot of money into the access to work grant, which, you know, people hardly mention. They've put a lot of, you know, that changing the legislation to make work pay, so that when you do get into work, you know, raising the minimum wage and improving people's working conditions, particularly for people going into jobs that are, you know, none of those are things that I've ever heard reform. And no, I don't think we need to take any lessons from a party that's got 5 MPs who can't agree amongst themselves.
And they have their own industrial relations issues, don't they? So it seems, yes.
I mean, they're already having a fight. I mean, we had this on the London Assembly. We had this on the London
Accordion.
We've only got one Reform UK, so he can't fall out with himself.
I'm sure we'd give it his best shot.
But, you know, we had two UKIP assembly members who, in the end, never spoke to each other because they fell out so badly. I mean, they were pretty nasty to each other. But, you know, it was just, they're a joke. I mean, they will all fall out with each other because, so no, we're not taking lessons from them. But, I think there are certain principles, you know, in getting people into work and not having them leading meaningless lives, it is a really important principle. I think preserving the benefits for people who really are disabled. I think the problem is when you talk about these things, there's lots of different groups of people claiming the same benefits. And there's also this weird perverse incentive that you get more money if you claim disability benefits than you do if you claim unemployment benefits. So, you know, we do need to get rid of things like that. You know, people shouldn't be saying I'm ill just to get more money. That's mad.
Well, there's a report actually, and talk about empowerment. Somebody nameless with cerebral palsy doing editorial in the South West London about this, pointing out that there is probably going to be a knock-on cost to the NHS, albeit NHS England has been abolished, from the nature of some of these cuts and the reports that, 50,000 kids are likely to end up in poverty as a result of this. Now, I appreciate this isn't about PIP, it might partly but be, but it's actually about the broader economic forecast and the nature of these thresholds. So, it in a sense, I guess, given the very broad brush approach that with which Reeves and her predecessors and perhaps successors are lumbered with, the options are a little bit limited, not too finessed. But overall, the political weather here is that this looks a little bit like the nasty party light, doesn't it, gentlemen? Is there a problem with needing to carry on the optics because that's what we're used to and it's darn good for us, sort of thing, as opposed to as you say, the finessed arguments that Leonie so eloquently makes that this can empower people when it's effective? That made this sort of economic rejig, albeit in tough times.
Yeah, well, the optics are the indicators of what the government are actually doing. We can only trust them that they are doing what they're saying. And if we lose that trust, then we don't follow them and we object.
Well, I suppose that plays to the argument of staying within the rules anticipated in the election promises.
Within the law, in other words, within the
Well, indeed,
Constitution.
yeah.
And the indications are that they're not understanding the Constitution, not following the Constitution, not following the wisdom that's been built up over hundreds of years, and they can make up something that's better themselves.
What
That's
makes you
always
say that? I mean, yeah, are you saying
the problem. That's always the problem with politicians.
I mean, one
You
noticeable
get
factor is,
trust.
yes, yeah. One noticeable factor is that there's been no increase in taxation on the wealthy, or indeed the tech giants and so forth, which I suppose perhaps addresses the, shall we say, the global nature of their provenance. Are you referring to that or something else?
Yeah, you're probably, well, this is what you have to make a guess. It's probably that she's been leaned on by the Treasury, which is heavily influenced by the fossil industry, which is why she's got this anti-green attitude. And she can't actually see the wealth you can create through green technology, which the Chinese have cleaned up on by the look of it. And America has failed as well. And America's going to collapse as an economy due to Trump's actions.
Well, there's also the matter, isn't there, of this looming potential 25% tariff on the auto industry over in Canada. They're saying that there's a sort of push-me-pull-you effect with parts going across the border, which effectively means that there won't be any profit margin left on effectively American cars that are part produced in Canada. The way these components are shipped around these days and put together like a jigsaw, a global jigsaw, basically means that an entire industry could go down, and with it any numbers of jobs. So the effect potentially is inflationary, I guess, isn't it? Across several territories.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and economists know this, and Trump doesn't. But
Well,
Trump's
he's
not
saying
concerned.
he doesn't.
He's not concerned with that. All he's concerned with this is extending the American empire, and with his buddy Putin. And that's why
Marcus.
Europe has to go alone against, as we did in the Second World War. It's following the route of the Second World War,
So that's the
and
next
this
thing.
time, it's. Russia has gone in with China rather than Stalin going in with Hitler.
Indeed, it's a very searing comparison there. Mal, is the
They took over Poland. So Putin's trying to take over Ukraine.
Yeah.
And the Americans didn't understand it in the Second World War either until very late. It's only the Pearl Harbor that got them to come in and fight.
Indeed. And looming behind all this is the relatively long game of economics, I guess, isn't it? And the way, for example, by the same token, that America rescued Germany immediately after the war and turned Germany hitherto into a fairly thriving economy, that now in recession, that is now, ironically enough, having to do a sort of quantitative easing thing in order to up its defence spending and the sort of as it were the catalytic effect of doing so. Mal,
You
don't
could argue that's Keynesian economics, and Galbraith said that he had to disguise Keynesian economics to get Nixon to use it against the right wing and in America.
such a useful point to raise there, Graham, indeed, the disguising of it. What about Trump's passive aggression then, Mal, and the economic effects of it? Which presumably it is the next thing coming down the pike, is that even as Reeves was going to press, so to speak.
Oh, who knows? And always one of the issues with Trump, which has been, in one peculiar sense, part of his strength is this capriciousness and how he changes his mind from day to day. And anyone trying to deal with him, friend or foe, is constantly wrong-footed by these changes, quite radical lurches in policy. He sort of dropped the sanctions for a few days after introducing them, and then he's back down that line at the moment. He does seem to have this particular love of tariffs, which presumably the aim being to, well, it's protecting the American Rust Belt
Well, is it, you know? Yeah.
manufacturing industry in the short term. But of course, what it also does then is it removes helpful competitive pressure. So your industry starts to become less efficient, and ultimately everybody loses out. If you want to buy American, the American goods are less efficiently produced because they haven't been under competitive pressure from elsewhere. And if you want to buy goods from overseas, you're hit with a huge tariff on top of that. Which, of course, Trump. Whether Trump actually understood it or not, but he wasn't ever terribly clear in saying that tariffs are actually paid by American customers, not by the company that's doing the exporting into the US. And therefore, by definition, if you put a tariff on something, that pushes up the cost of living at home. But that's how it works, is by putting up those prices, it deters people from buying them. And they turn to, in theory, turn to products that don't carry that tariff. In other words, American-produced companies. And there's a sort of nagging worry that we're only a few months into the Trump presidency, and all this has happened. Presumably, part of him will be thinking that if he doesn't manage to overturn the American Constitution and get appointed president for life, or allowed to stand for a third term, then he'll want to go out with a bang. I hope not literally. And so you wonder whatever, if this is what he's doing in the first few months, what's he got up his sleeve for the later years of his second term? And it does make, running the world very, very difficult if the most important economy of the world, you're constantly second guessing how it's going to behave.
I wonder what the mechanics might be of what some people are saying in again, a rather broad brush way, is a sort of passive aggressive takeover of the rest of us. But on the back of this apparent unpredictability. Again, can you see that happening? Or is he effectively undermining his own power by doing what he's doing?
Well, I don't think this is apparent unpredictability, unfortunately. I think this is unpredictability. I think as Malcolm used the word, capricious. He is completely capricious. He's also very happy to hand out insults at the drop of a hat. I mean, look at the names that they've just been calling the guy, who for some reason, Mike Waltz and Pete Hegseth and JD Vance decided to have a good old chat with about bombing Yemen, which is the most bizarre thing.
In a supermarket car park, we're told. Yeah, yes, if you do.
Signal and Telegram and WhatsApp, you can only join people into a chat if you already have their number in your phone. So the most bizarre part of this whole story is it would appear that Pete Hegseth, who invited him in, I think it was Hegseth, obviously had this
Well, printing error. Yeah,
the
yeah.
he had the editor of the Atlantic's phone number in his phone already, and then bizarrely
I see
invited
that.
him invited him to join this chat. So it's not just capriciousness. There's also, some very pronounced ideas, as seen in their unvarnished variant in the chat. So they appear to have a real down on Europe. They appear, which includes Ukraine, they appear to be very happy to treat nicely with the Russians for some reason, which is a complete, and I think they're coming from the my enemy's enemy is my friend. So they seem to think that they can make Russia their friend, which would be good news for them against
the Trumpian sense of the word, perhaps.
Yeah. Against the Chinese. So if we're friendly with the Russians, we can form a front with the Russians against the Chinese. I don't think they've actually noticed that there is already a front which includes North Korea, China, Iran, Russia and Belarus. And in fact, actually, they should have very easily noticed that when they voted with those countries in the United Nations against the motion on the anniversary of the third anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine in February. And they voted with the Russians, the Belarusians, the North Koreans, and the Chinese against this motion. So, they must be able to see that there is this sort of link up between Russia and these other countries. And the Russians must be laughing at them. The idea that the Americans can turn on its head the way that those relationships have built up over the years. I mean, it's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous that we'll chum up with the Russians and that will turn them against the Chinese. It's just a nonsense. And in the meantime, they seem to be, I mean, I think it's worse than when they refused to get involved in the Second World War until 1941, at the end of 1941, when Pearl Harbor was bombed. And so they eventually got involved from 1942 because they were just saying it's nothing to do with us. Now they seem to have this violently anti-European view. The idea that Europeans are all just freeloaders was one of the words that they've used. The idea that Europeans are against free speech. Free speech is not the Atlantic being able to have free speech, by the way, because they've called him a sleaze bag and all sorts of things. And the Atlantic magazine has also come in from had opprobriums, thrown over its head by Trump et al. Free speech is their idea of free speech, which is alternative for Deutschland, who are, make racist statements. And Musk involving himself in all this as well is really very dangerous, because he's going around Washington saying, I will fund people to stand against you in your primary to Republican House of Representatives and senators. So that people at the moment, that's why the Republicans aren't coming out and saying more about what's going on at home, because some of what's going on with Doge and cutting funds to federal education budgets and healthcare budgets and all the rest of it is going to have other impacts on the American people, apart from the stock market, which has plunged at least three times on the back of Trump's economic illiteracy. And the stuff about tariffs is just ridiculous. So, I mean, I don't know whether he'll last the full 4 years before he crashes the economy. He will. I mean, if he carries on like this, I think he'll do really badly in the midterms. So he could fritter
away.
He could fritter away the fact that he's got this big trifecta at the moment, because he's got the House, he's got the Senate, and he's clearly got the judiciary. But even the judiciary have criticised him for shoving a load of Venezuelans on a plane and just taking them to El Salvador. I think they have now flown on to Venezuela. But I mean, he's clearly breaking the law left, right and centre. So the American people knew one of these things. He'd had 96 charges thrown at him and been declared a felon. So, if he breaks the American economy en route to doing all these wild and capricious things, and the cost of living goes up, I don't think the American people would be very happy. because the Republicans did spend a lot of time during the campaign, which the Democrats didn't, which was very stupid of them. But the Republicans did talk about the cost of groceries, and gave people the impression that they were going to be helpful on that front. Well, so far, he's almost crashed the stock market, I think, three times now. So, he's not being helpful economically for Americans. And if tariffs are imposed, as Malcolm says, it will just push prices up, which is not what anyone wants.
Sometimes it may be when you notice the small things. Michelle, my friend, is in Chicago now and is not particularly happy about being there anymore, for a variety of reasons, which are for another time. The cost of blueberries, apparently from Mexico, if I understand correctly, has sort of doubled in recent days. And suddenly, people at the sort of mid-market area of things are beginning to notice that these things have direct effects on their everyday habits. Apart from the big purposes like cars and whatnot, which I suppose are also quite routine in America, aren't they? You can buy anything from an Aldi to a rifle in a Walmart.
Yeah, they import a lot of fruit and veg from Mexico. So, one of the side effects of having a trade war with Mexico will be that, if they're importing stuff from Mexico, including food items, it will go up in cost. I mean, the doubling is, well, I suppose, that's the price the American people are going to have to be happy to pay for having re-elected Trump.
One polyglot theory here goes that something on the lines of the fact that if things get sufficiently bad, there could be the basis for an anti-constitutional coup, as there nearly was on January 6th the other year. This ripple effect could then be repeated, and you would end up effectively with, should we say, emergency measures, to put it politely. Is there any weight to that argument?
Well, you're beginning to see people going out on the streets and attacking Tesla cars, so that's beginning the violence. And I that that as Leonie said, it's the dollar in their pocket that's animating the American public, and they're beginning to notice that they're that much poorer, and even Musk is noticing that his fortune is halved. So I think he's beginning to regret a few things. But it's again all according to the Constitution as to whether the separation of powers actually works and the law can hold the government to account for unlawful behavior. And that's the tricky part, is how are they going to arrest Trump and his government. But that's it wouldn't be a coup, it'd be the implementation of the Constitution.
Yeah. I mean, with
And
regard to
it's
the
just
deportation, they're using very, very old laws, tweaked a little bit, aren't they, in some cases, where somebody can be painted at least as big a threat to the state
well,
based
they've
on the.
obviously changed the interpretation of those laws
Yes.
in the coup.
Yeah.
And it's worth comparing what Trump's doing to Brexit. He's damaging his market. He's also leaving Europe. He's anti-Europe, and it's the same as the Brexiteers. They're anti-Europe, destroying their own market.
So it's a strategically self-inflicted wound in order to what to increase the optics of looking like a brave avenger or something of that nature, and
Well, that's
nationalist.
Putin's motivation partly is that you need an external war to suppress the your own inhabitants, to put Russia on a war footing.
People said that of Thatcher, the Falklands, didn't they? That this was a sort of her nuclear button, as it were, in terms of for her political survival.
I think it's what saved her, but I don't think it was the reason she went. She wasn't trying to create a war.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, the poll tax eventually did for her, didn't they? But for a popular consensus, which is still with us.
That was far better example. But it's the mechanisms that are at play, and that's what Clear Dynamics predicts, is the collapse of American civilization. As you know, Brexit is
If
collapsing.
indeed it ever existed, as some have said.
Well, it's the same as Brexit. It's collapsing the British constitution and the civilization as well. You know, with the literal curtailing of British culture around the world.
I seem to remember a little Dave Stewart piece pre-Eurythmics, it's called The Collapso, which I think refers to a long lunch in Covent Garden many, many years ago before he sort of went on the wagon. Mel, is that what we're looking at here? Is effectively this sort of highly accelerated managed decline with political consequences? I mean, you were saying a couple of weeks ago that you really thought that Trump would be able to see this through. Are you still of that mind?
I think there's a, I mean, I think it's a mistake to blame everything on Brexit as to where we are at the moment, because there are
Well,
huge
Graham's
issues,
saying the template
particularly.
of it being translated, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I continue to think Brexit was a mistake, and I think it's been very costly. We'd be in the best position if we hadn't pursued it. But the what I think we're seeing in London at the moment is a growing sense among the Yeah, well, London really isn't a British city anymore in many, many of its areas now. You go there and it just doesn't look like what one thinks of as Britain. And the issue of
Can you say a
those
bit more
groups
about
which,
that? I think I know what you mean, but I mean, this is a
yeah,
cultural
well,
point,
because
isn't
there
it?
are areas where it just feels like a Middle Eastern Muslim city. And
Oh, for
the
goodness sake, Malcolm, don't
I rather like the
exaggerate.
sound of
Where are
that,
we?
actually,
Where?
but I think.
Where?
Well, okay, we'll take, you know, areas around Tower Hamlets, around the areas to the traditional East
Bangor
End,
Town and so forth.
which feels like it's now, you know, there are many
No, it
groups that
doesn't.
have.
It doesn't feel anything like a Middle Eastern or Muslim city.
It could
That
be
is
a bit warmer
complete
for some,
nonsense.
yeah, okay.
Complete
When was the
nonsense.
last time you went to a Muslim city, Malcolm? It's a moving there, but and certainly elsewhere, if you go to the East and West Midlands, there's this sense, and I'm not, yeah, I'm not. This should, I mean, sort of develop points slightly, but the, in a sense, the important thing is what starts happening when a significant number of people whose families have lived for generations in an area start to feel that they're no longer welcome there. And we can't continue to ignore the fact there is still a teacher in the Midlands who is in hiding after 4 years with no support from the authorities because of a lesson that he gave about Islam in his school, that there are growing numbers of cases that we're seeing through the courts where there is a very clear difference between, yeah, we have a Christian woman arrested for standing in silence outside an abortion clinic, while the most dreadful, yeah, things are just watching a video just before we started now. Of someone out in the streets of London saying, yeah, with a sign saying, you know, Hitler was good. And he said, because, yeah, he killed all the Jews, didn't he? And that's a good thing. And we seem to be, and the level of, you know, fear in the Jewish community. I've got a synagogue at the corner of my ward, and it's heartbreaking with this. And those are issues which, unless we address them and can go back to a single-tier justice system where it's the crime that matters rather than the perpetrator, then there's a real danger that we're going to see. The rise of reform is no coincidence. The fact that in several of the polls this week, reform were actually in the lead, and certainly right on balance. This is despite, as Leonie said, the tendency of all of that group, whether it was from the British National Party through, actually that's unfair, but through, you know, UKIP through to reform,
The
the
tactics
tendency of
rather than
them
the agenda you're referring
just to
to, isn't
fall
it?
apart and to fall out with
Continuity
each
in
other.
this one.
It happened within a year when UKIP won Thanet Council, that they'd fallen apart and lost a majority on the council just through personal animosity. But despite all of that, reform is leading in the polls. They may win a by-election. that's coming up, and they are having some very good local government results
So
at the
this
moment. So,
normalisation of personal animosity, as you so helpfully put it, that seems to be the trope through all this. I mean, either
well,
stoking it,
I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that even stuff that you would have thought would put people off, the momentum behind reform at the moment is very significant. Now, my suspicion is that won't translate into votes in a major election. And indeed, if they do start winning councils, people are going to see how they are actually in power, and that may take some of the shine off it as well. But to continue with this denigration, I mean, we have a school that I can't remember where it was, but this week, a primary school which said it was going to abandon its traditional Easter celebrations because it was offensive to some people, but instead they were going to have a refugee week. It's I mean, in itself, recognizing that there are different people in the school is of course a good thing, but if it's so blatantly put out as saying we are going to move away from what many of the parents in that school would regard as just being simple British culture, that's no longer acceptable. There's a real powder keg that's being dealt with here, and of course exacerbated by the government introducing laws that say that you'll get a lighter sentence if you come from certain groups, including certain ethnic minority groups. We had a
That wasn't the government that said that, and the Justice Secretary has repudiated that suggestion from the. It was actually the sentence.
interpretation,
It
certainly,
was from the Sentencing Council, and that, as far as I understand it, has been put on hold and is not being implemented. She said she wants them to go away and think again. I don't know why they came. Well, I do know why they came up with it. It's because if you do look at the justice system at the moment, there is a massive overrepresentation of some groups within it. So what they were trying to do in a very clumsy way. So I think Shabana Mahmood is quite correct to suggest that they need to look again at what they were proposing. But what they were trying to do was to ensure that the justice system, which at the moment does seem to be biased at all points, for example, against black people, that those should be careful to make sure that sentencing is equalised so that black people, black men in particular, are not twice as likely to be stopped and searched, twice as likely to
and culturally
receive,
stigmatized as a result.
receive heavier sentences, twice as likely to be sent to jail, etc., etc. So it was a very clumsy attempt, but it wasn't the government that said it. It was the Sentencing Council, and the government minister has stepped in and said, "Hold on a minute, I'm not sure about this." And ironically, for Malcolm's argument, Shabana Mahmood, as you might guess from her name, is in fact a Muslim woman MP, and indeed represents a West Midlands seat. I do repudiate much of the argument that Malcolm has just been making, and then to link it. To, I mean, how often do you go to the Wimbledon synagogue, Malcolm?
It's been a little while since I've been recently, but there are obviously people in the ward that I talk to on a regular basis about this, who we have a discussion around this. But if you go, almost always when I've gone past, there's a police officer just standing outside the synagogue, and that's not the kind of country I want to live in at the moment,
Well, thank goodness they're
where.
not outside the Aberdeens yet, with whom you, I know you also regularly break bread.
Well, it was very strange. I had a chat with one of the elders of the Ahmadiyyas just a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying, and they're a group who are superbly integrated. They do a huge amount. Every year they have a charity
Sort
walk.
of wrote the book on it, really,
They do
didn't they?
great stuff in the ward, and I've always been very impressed with them and grateful for the fact that we have them around. And of course they are very badly persecuted by in many areas of the world,
General Zia had a good old go at that, didn't he?
by other Muslims. But funny, I was chatting to him, and I was saying, and he's saying that they've not actually seen any Islamophobia around the East Putney mosque, the mosque in just it's right on the borders of my ward, which was really good to hear, obviously. But I was very slightly surprised there. I mean, very, very pleasantly surprised, because the happening, and maybe there is something about West Hill and Wandsworth generally that we do have such a mix of communities very much living in contact with each other.
Well, they've got you
that,
the only
that we
facade,
maybe don't
which is,
face some of the problems that I think are being observed in some areas. We certainly don't. But I was just a little bit interested that they were so positive and saying that they'd not been facing any backlash, that they were, or certainly any noticeable backlash. So, I mean, you can do this. You can organise around giving all groups the same rights and the same things. And that does mean that occasionally there will be clashes. We've got the, I was reading today about the calls to ban any eating in public, anybody eating anything in public during Ramadan, because it would be difficult for the for those who are observing Ramadan. Mm. And there was some point where you got to say, well, no, that you can't let anything, you can't let any single group dictate all of the behaviour of the rest of society. So there's going to be tensions within this, but you can do this. But what I don't think works is when you do start following this route that does seem to actively denigrate certainly, Christianity at the moment, but really actively denigrate any group which doesn't threaten all sorts of things if they don't get their way, and that's a very dangerous point for society, because if you do, that's how we're 50 years, on the century really of Hitler's beginning of the persecution of the Jews, but you get, really unpleasant right-wing movements thrive on this idea that there are two-tier justice. At the moment, it's extremely difficult to avoid the conclusion that in some key ways, not least freedom of speech, where people are being locked up for posting anti-government tweets in certain ways, whereas people who are found guilty of paedophile offences seems very, very often now to be walking free. We have the situation in some of the northern towns where grooming gangs have now been released, have the addresses of their previous and current victims, and we get Oldham Council voting against or threatening, eventually it was overturned, but you get the councils up there voting against public inquiries to really see how we properly protect these young people, and particularly young, well, mainly, almost exclusively young girls in those towns. And it's all just, there are mistakes being made here, serious mistakes, I think, which will end up exacerbating and threatening a backlash that will be really very significant. And if we start moving back towards treating all people with with equality under the law, and not making massive exemptions for certain views, we can still do this, and we still get back to the pretty even keel that we were on through the 80s and 90s. But if we don't do that, if we continue down this stretch, then you can't help but feel that things may well take an unpleasant turn.
It is kind of who the we is in the situation, isn't it? I mean, what's your take on that, Graham? We seem to be moving in the direction of the cultural stoking of what can then be economically reinforced in terms of, shall we say, reaping the whirlwind.
Yeah, I think, it's still Ramadan, I think, and so you're getting a very good illustration of how the English Muslim communities are different from in a lot of other Muslim cities.
I actually had occasion to visit the Croydon Mosque over the road here last night, and they're wonderful.
Yeah, you don't have the kind of repression you do in some other cities.
Mm.
So I think it's a question. It's the easiest thing to stir people into antagonism is by pressing on the cultural buttons.
Who wrote the book on this? Did anybody write the book on it? Is it sort of Ayn Rand? Is it who am I thinking of? Something along those lines.
Well, you just create fantasies of enemy.
The enemy within and all that.
I mean, it used to be religious wars,
Well, still is really, isn't it?
Yeah, it still is to a certain extent. That's part of the tragedy of Gaza. It's a religious war,
Indeed.
which I think, and then the danger is that it's being transferred into other countries around the world.
Yeah, if you trace back the, the theology on this, it really says nothing about what's being done in the name of some deity or other, does it? With a large or small first letter.
Well, that was the interesting thing about the book that this friend Jean Gérard Bernstein, he was an analyst, psychoanalyst, and he's written a book on the Bible, the psychoanalysis of the Bible, and pointed out that the Ten Commandments were the constitution for the Jewish people. And if they don't follow them, then they won't survive as a race.
Without
So,
extreme measures.
yeah, but that goes exactly with in accordance with the Clio dynamics. It's the whole system. If the whole system is, and this is where I think Malcolm is distorting a bit to say you don't blame everything on this. You don't blame everything on
I think he's actually
that.
speaking the language of the times, the political weather, isn't he, if I understand correctly? Matt will
Well,
correct me, will advise me if I'm wrong here.
if you use systems thinking, then you just adjust the proportionality of the effect of any particular event on the whole, and that's what you're trying to do. So
The modal
you have
art
to
of
adjust.
iteration, yeah.
Presumably, that's what the skill of the politician is. He can engage how to get the greatest effect or minimize the worst effect.
We come
But
back in a sense, don't we, to reading the optics as with the alleged effect on people with disabilities that we alluded to earlier on with Reeves's swing statement. Anyway, sorry, you were saying, Graham.
yeah, well, that's the I mean, she's Rachel Reeves is obviously pushing her credibility when she's getting money for continuing to take money from the poor and creating these wealth pumps
Dennis Moore
from the
running for the
wealth from
Glen.
the from the poor to the rich, and this is what tips civilizations over
You
the
put the
edge.
next line of the Python song, don't you?
I mean, and but that's the effect of the social media. And it's why if she lets the big tech companies off the hook for taxes, then I think she'll do a big disfavor, because the whole trend at the moment is to recognize the damage that social media is doing to the species, basically.
And the yeah,
We're
well.
losing our intelligence, we're losing our concentration, we're losing our creativity, handing it all over to machines. And this is a very long-term negative effect. It is about the transition of humans into machines. So it is extremely serious. But it's always, in terms of politics, I would assume, it's the skill of the politicians that you need as to how to stop it happening. Because the public obviously don't have the power. They've handed the power over to the politicians. Now, if they're let down by the politicians and they're still remaining poor, then they're going to stop believing the politicians.
What Marlon earlier, Leone were pointing out is the idea of the sort of Hayekian creative destruction built in to the sort of redacted political life cycle, I should say, of the average far right proponent or thereabouts. I won't call Reform UK far right, but they tilt in that direction. In other words, they do end up beating themselves up in a performative way and then leaving someone else to clear up the mess. But
Yeah.
that expectation that they're all in it for themselves. One thinks of Lindsay Hoyle this week and his jollies.
Well, that was the problem with neoliberalism. It's taking free trade to an absurd level. which is just creating all these wealth pumps that are just making the poor poorer.
Well, effectively, it's no longer free because it's tariffed up to the nines. Leone, do you want to come back in?
That's the tariffs are just creating other wealth pumps, i.e. the wealth pump into Trump's personal pocket. And against and out of his
at which point he can wind down the window and distribute them Maundy, just like King Charles's forebears did.
Yeah, so well, it's all happening before our eyes, and let's hope the American Constitution. I mean, we should give all sympathy to the American people. I mean, we know people who are thinking of emigrating from.
Well, they are in droves, aren't they?
Just so bad, and it's particularly at universities.
Mm.
You know, the censorship is coming in, and people are getting the sack, and they're.
Sometimes some Trump people are fleeing for their lives before they're pushed.
He's moving on from putting judges in place to kicking everyone out of the country. As Lenny said, mentioned last week.
We can only ever get kicked back in again, but not
people
yet.
People who voted for Trump are now finding themselves on planes out to Venezuela.
Well, so, you know, it's very nice this time of year, I understand, if you don't mind the old coup.
Well, I think this is the way, the information is transmitted into the general population, and they react. So they're going through the whole of America is going through a huge political lesson for all those people who voted for Trump, discovering his lies to their cost.
Yeah, also part of, I suppose, that self-same cycle. But if we take, for example, the situation, well, in Canada with Carney calling the election this past week, the Conservatives appear to be narrowly ahead. What are our predictions for how that might pan out in terms of the 51st state? And indeed, there's a lot going on in that department, isn't there? Greenland, apparently annexed by Denmark in 1954. Do I have that right? Saying that they really want to declare UDI, but they will accept the trade agreement. Could they pull that off?
Well, that's the danger. There's a very small population in Greenland.
With loads of rare earth, apparently.
I believe they're welcoming, or maybe welcoming isn't quite the word, but apparently J.D. Vance and his wife, Usha.
Heavily disguised.
What, from the archers, you mean?
I believe so.
Yes. There might be a slightly different Usha. So a real Usha as opposed to an imaginary person. But I
always thought the artist was real. And, it's like Father Christmas. And all. Anyway,
Okay, I won't mention Santa.
I'll get over it.
Yeah, apparently J.D. Vance and Usha are arriving in Greenland today or yesterday for a little visit. So that might be quite... I mean, I think we're in very... dangerous territory here. I mean, Canada, actually, the head of state is King Charles. So
indeed,
when
nobody noticed, apparently.
And when America starts talking about the 51st state, that effectively would mean that the US is purloining part of the UK. So that's a little bit awkward.
Civil War!
And of course, War of Independence. And then, of course, at the moment, Greenland is indeed part of Denmark. So he would be really taking steps against another member of NATO. So that's two members of NATO. And then, of course, he's also decided he wants the Panama Canal. So let's just pop the Panama Canal in there. To say nothing of ethnically cleansing everybody out of Gaza. The Trump Riviera. So we've got a lot of strongman land grabbing going on. So it's very hard for him to criticise Putin for entering Ukraine and trying to purloin Ukraine. And of course, it's going to make it really difficult if China decides that they're going to conquer Taiwan. So they're also looking at what Trump is doing and thinking, well, this is going to give us the
green. I forgot about that. It's been on hold for a number of years, but they do these exercises perilously close to the coast, don't they? that sort of
Well,
thing.
no, that's bits of Japan. They've
Oh,
also
you're quite right. Yes.
eyeing
Yeah.
up as well. The
Yeah.
South China Sea has become another front line between China and all of its neighbors down there. And allegedly, the US is a big mate of Japan. But of course, they're saying that China is the real enemy. So, I mean, if they've just annexed Greenland and made Canada the 51st state and nabbed the Panama Canal, but they're still saying that China's the big threat. What will the Americans do if China goes into Taiwan?
So economically, we were talking about early on, effectively about posturing and panic and alarm, of course, on Wall Street, and the potential for, as it were, as Hayek would put it, creative destruction amidst all that. Is this not exactly what's going on here? That these are mooted threats that will, if anything comes to pass, it will effectively be done in back rooms by hopefully relatively deft trade negotiations, as opposed to tariffs.
Well, it's a choice between one or the other, and the trade,
All of not both then.
peace through trade is what you want. So I think
Not green and what?
as Britain relied on the Commonwealth to win the Second World War, then we should rely on the United Nations and pally up to the whole rest of the world, because the rest of the world is coming together to have a sort of common view about the politics and international law. That's one of the things against Netanyahu is he's breaking international law,
Yeah,
and
he's represented by the United
The
Nations.
Americans, of course, don't accept that because they've never joined the international court. And of course, last time Trump started pulling America out of the WHO and had all those fights for the United Nations. So, could he be heading towards pulling out of NATO? And if he really wants Greenland and really wants Canada, then I don't see how he can stay in the United Nations credibly. The WHO, I think he's already announced they pulled out of. So and then there's a massive outbreak of measles in Texas already, and measles is a really dangerous
Highly
disease.
decorative.
It might be decorative, but it can also make you go blind and die.
Indeed, indeed,
Not
indeed.
quite as
That's an
decorative. Being
unfortunate
blind,
collateral, this, yeah.
yeah, being dead is not so decorative. I'll just throw that out there. Listen, guys, I've got to go because it's the end of my hour. It's been great talking to you. Catch you later.
Nice
Thank you,
to see you,
Leonie.
Leonie.
Look after
Yeah.
yourself.
Indeed. We live in interesting times. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend despite it all. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.